All right, so now we'll move on to paper 9. So the measurement of the loss allowance for credit impaired assets, and that's Hannah's going to take us through that. Okay, agenda paper 9 is about the measurement of the loss allowance for financial assets that are measured at amortised cost and that are credit impaired across three assets. We note that this issue is not about purchased or originated credit impaired financial assets. Now here the submitters note that in their experience there's currently some diversity in practice when entities do use the loss allowance as permitted in IAS 39 for amortised cost financial assets, for which there's an objective evidence of impairment, so on our incurred loss basis under IAS 39. And we understand the purpose of the submission is to clarify that perhaps not all of the approaches that may be used at the moment in 39 are acceptable when we're looking at loss allowances for credit impaired financial assets under IFRS 9. And I think this is because we're much more specific in IFRS 9, and there's more specific requirements. The requirements in IFRS 9 are the same for stage 3 as for stage 2 assets, despite different presentation requirements for the interest revenue for credit incurred financial assets in the profit and in the income statement. But IFRS 9 is very clear that the loss allowance is calculated by discounting your expected cash shortfalls to the reporting date using the original effective interest rate determined at initial recognition, obviously for fixed rate instruments, or an approximation thereof in terms of the interest rate used. And therefore, the approaches that have been suggested by the submitter, which is in paragraph 15 of the paper, two of the approaches, B and C, would not meet those requirements and therefore wouldn't be appropriate for the purposes of applying IFRS 9. Do you have any comments on that?
I'll comment as well on this. I think it's clearly explained by the staff members, and we do agree with your view that B and C are not appropriate.
Okay.
Maybe just let someone else in there. I think the reason that this paper also got raised is that today under IAS 39, we do see A, B, and C all being used. Mm. And because the interest income recognition is not driven off of the gross carrying value of the loan or the net carrying value of the loan, perhaps people aren't paying nearly as much attention to it. And therefore, the diversity in practice that might exist today needs to be fixed by the time you get to IFRS 9. And I think that's what I would like the minutes to reflect, if you agree with me.
Okay.
Does anyone have any other disagreements with that? I mean, today we'll accept any of it, but going forward it'd have to change. Chris maybe doesn't like that.
Chris?
Well, rather than saying we'd accept anything, which is a bit of a blank check, I think the point is more that IAS 39 does not have guidance around when you record a separate allowance versus when you do a direct write-down. That's a weakness in 39, and is one of the benefits of IFRS 9 to require a loss allowance generally, and say it's only when you get to no realistic prospect of recovery, that's when you, when everybody should consistently then apply a write-down approach, and that gives much better, I think, transparency as to the perception of, you know, credit status and what may or may not be recoverable, allows much more comparability in terms of coverage ratios. Yeah, so I think it's important to flow through this logic also into stage 3 items, and it's consistent with basically what you're doing for stage 1 and stage 2 stuff. That also means approach A works if you ever have to transfer things back, because otherwise you'll get in a real mess if you do B and C and it goes back to stage 1 or stage 2. One thing maybe it's worth minuting, maybe it's just too obvious, is that obviously when you apply approach A, as in this example, you get a 6 increase in the loss allowance, and that 6 increase in the loss allowance is not a impairment charge in profit or loss. It's just a contra against 6 of the increase in the gross carrying amount. And so I think that's when we've had these discussions, one of the things that have confused people. Do I have to put the six in the P&L as an impairment charge or no? It's just it's an increase in the loss allowance that doesn't go through profit or loss. It would appear in the roll forward.
So what I'd suggest there, I'm not too keen on sort of talking about diversity of practice and 39, given we haven't, usually we only say that if we've actually asked the world if they would agree with that statement. But what I'd like to suggest to, I think helps your point anyway, George, would be that we confirm that approach A is what is required by IFRS 9. It's the right one, isn't it? Yes, A. And that 39 didn't have this level of specificity. Yes. Whereas IFRS 9 does. Do we then want to go on and make the point that Chris just made about the contra entries? I'm just a little bit, we don't actually say that in black and white in 9, so I'm not so sure.
It's quite challenging to draft as well without an example.
So I prefer to stick just with those sort of two observations, if that's all right with people, which will confirm that approach A is the approach required by IFRS 9. And
well, is that because what Chris said should be entirely obvious?
It depends who you are, whether something's entirely obvious. But
would people agree with what Chris said? So would it be helpful to put that in there?
I'd suggest it would be helpful. For the point of clarification.
Okay. Well, we'll try.
And I think there still is some, I think, temptation to think about non-accrual type approaches, which is not what IFRS embraces. But for those who dabble with US GAAP, and there's non-accrual rules that are there as well, I think people say I like sometimes approach C better because, you know, I'm not going to get the interest, so why should I set it up? And so the gross amount of the loan is understated by doing that, and I think that just isn't right. And not, there is no non-accrual concepts in IFRS, correct?
Yes.
Okay,
so we'll try and articulate this as a gross entry that adjusts the gross carrying amount and the loss allowance. Okay. All right.